Hello, and welcome to BJGP Interviews. I'm Nada Khan, and I'm one of the associate editors of the BJGP. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast today. In this episode, we talk to Professor Miranda Palin, a public health doctor who is Professor of Child and Adolescent Public Health at the University of Birmingham. We're going to discuss the paper that she and her team have published here in the BJGP titled Supporting Healthcare Professionals to Address Child Weight with Parents, a Qualitative Study. Thanks, Miranda, for joining me here today to talk about this research. I think that most clinicians would probably reflect that discussions around childhood weight can sometimes be a touchy subject that GPs sometimes have concerns around starting in practice. Looking at the background to this work, what do we know already about these conversations and barriers to them in general practice?
There's quite a bit of international literature on this, actually, and there are some very common themes that have come out from the literature. And really, healthcare professionals working in primary care or community settings, often they just feel ill-equipped, underconfident to initiate these conversations with parents. A lack of time is almost universally cited as a barrier. And also fear of damaging that relationship that they have with the parents, so that healthcare professional patient relationship. Those are some of the common ones. But also there are things such as, you know, lack of onward referral services. So if they initiate the conversation, they then don't have a route to take that forward with the parent and the child.
And I know that from speaking to a lot of colleagues around nutrition and weight, it's often a topic that's not really taught very well at medical school, at least as well. But this was a qualitative study that you conducted of GPs and practice and school nurses who are really important in this population. And you specifically sampled people working in high areas of ethnic diversity and deprivation. Your main findings focus on some of the barriers and facilitators to having these discussions in practice. But I wanted to start just talking around some of the barriers to start with. What were some of the structural and organizational barriers that the people that you spoke to described in their practice?
Yes, I mean, I think, again, going back to that, what resonates with the international literature, there was definite lack of time. So general practice consultations that are typically 10 minutes long. Obviously, mostly these families are coming with their children not to discuss weight as the presenting issue. And so in that 10 minutes, it's very difficult to proactively raise the issue of child weight, particularly because it is a sensitive issue. Again, lack of referral services and pathways was another thing that we found. But it wasn't just that there was a lack of referral services and pathways. It was also actually that the healthcare professionals felt that they lacked knowledge. So they felt actually there are things out there that they could be referring to, but they just didn't know about it. A key finding was lack of access to weight data. So in England, we have the National Child Measurement Programme, which is a programme that has almost universal coverage and is an annual measurement of height and weight, and therefore BMI in children at school entry when they're age 4 or 5, and then again at when they leave primary school at the age of 11. And we have really, really good national data at the individual level on primary school children, but that as yet is not available in general practice and primary care. And so that's just one example of data that GPs and practice nurses don't have access to. But they said, you know, what they really would like is access to kind of longitudinal data that would enable them to track children throughout childhood. So one of the barriers was not having access to this, and therefore not, you know, being able to initiate the conversation in a meaningful way.
So there's no necessarily joined up way that this data is being shared across different organizations who might be collecting it. And you also looked at some of the healthcare provider related issues and how clinicians worried about damaging their relationships with the parents. What did they talk to here?
Yes, I mean, this was very common. I think actually, particularly in the primary care healthcare professionals, so the GPs and the practice nurses, they just felt that actually often if they mentioned it opportunistically, it would come a bit out of the blue for the families. They might then be defensive about it and not want to talk about it, or just taken aback because they hadn't come to discuss that. So it does relate back to that fact that you said at the beginning around this being a sensitive issue. I think with the school nurses, it was slightly different. They were a bit more used to talking about child weight. Their role is more related to the National Child Measurement Programme in lots of cases. And often they are the point of contact for parents who've received feedback on their child's weight from that programme. And so they're a little bit more used to talking about it. But still, they did describe it as a sensitive issue. And one of the things that I guess meant that they were a bit wary of bringing up the subject of child weight is if the family that they were dealing with had very complex issues themselves. So if there were complex social issues, or not even complex issues, but if there were families with different cultural experiences, then often the healthcare professionals would be quite worried about bringing up the issue of child weight and being able to deal with it in a sensitive way.
And in the paper, you also talk about some of the family-related themes. So what the families themselves thought about their perceptions of their children having excess weight. And you touched upon sometimes there were also some cultural differences in this. But what did you find here relating to these family perceptions?
So I think obviously this research has been undertaken from the healthcare professional perspective. But they were citing in the interviews and focus groups that we did with them that actually it is particularly in the populations that we recruited the healthcare professionals from. So they felt that there was a perception that families had around child weight that was that they worried much, much more about children being underweight and not eating properly. And they were much more likely to come and have conversations about that than actually a child having overweight or obesity. And that could even be the case when the children did have overweight or obesity, they were still worried about them not eating enough. So they felt that that was quite a difficult or a challenging issue to overcome. And it then related back to that kind of issue around their lack of confidence around their own cultural awareness as well.
And I'm interested from your perspective as a public health clinician about what the public health messaging is to the public or to families about what a healthy childhood weight is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really interesting one. I think in terms of public health messaging, we very much advocate healthy lifestyles, healthy nutrition and diet, and an active lifestyle, and take the emphasis off weight and onto having a healthy life, because we know that weight is a sensitive issue, and it's important that we don't lay the responsibility of weight at an individual's door or at a family's door. And I think from my perspective as a public health professional, that is really important. Having said that, we know lots of children do you have excess weight. So actually, in terms of childhood obesity, we know that by age 11, over a fifth of children have obesity, and then that's higher for overweight. So there is a real need to give support to these children and families. And that's why we undertook this research, because primary care and community healthcare professionals are one route in which we can do this and provide that support to families.
Yeah, and as you say, probably it's unfair to lay the blame really on families. And I'm sure we could have a much wider discussion around labeling of products and sort of how things are marketed, but we can leave that for another day. We've talked a lot about the barriers that you identified in this research, but I wanted to move on to some of the facilitators. So what enabled these conversations in practice? What did the clinicians talk to you about that?
So our data showed the things that they were already doing, and then the sorts of things that would enable them to better have these conversations as well. So in terms of the sorts of things they were doing, they were often linking the issue of weight to the presenting health issue. So if a parent brought a child in, for example, about constipation, then they would be able to have a conversation about diet and healthy weight and bring the issue in that way and provide support. So that was one way. They often reported giving common sense diet and physical activity advice. But this was, I think this was an interesting point, because they, even though they did that already, they did actually tell us that they were quite underconfident about that. And actually, they would really welcome more specific training about how to give more specific child weight management advice that was evidence-based. And they felt that they were kind of doing it on the fly, really. So that did link very much to actually the need for more training in this area. So those were some of the things that they were doing. They were also talking about involving the whole family and the importance of this. So again, linking back to focusing on healthy lifestyles and how the whole family can change their behaviour around what they eat and physical activity as well.
So you've talked about training, and I mentioned in the introduction to this around probably the lack of training that medical professionals get around obesity and lifestyle. But I wonder if you could give clinicians one take-home message for people working in primary care. How do you think we can better start these conversations in practice? You mentioned having a cue, for instance, so if it was related to another presenting complaint, but how would you see that we could potentially facilitate these conversations a bit better?
I think that's a really challenging question. So what we've done in the paper is we've used our data looking at both the barriers and facilitators to develop a set of recommendations for strategies to improve the support for healthcare professionals working in primary care. And I think although healthcare professionals as individuals can implement some of those things, like linking a discussion to the presenting complaint, or potentially making a dedicated appointment to bring a family back and talk about the issue with them, where there's more space and they've signaled to the family that that's what they're going to do in a subsequent appointment. I think that has to be coupled with the more structural changes that would enable healthcare professionals to make those changes themselves at the individual level. So, for example, it's unrealistic to expect GPs to be able to make these dedicated appointments for all families. They see where a child has excess weight. Actually, that would need to be something that would be built into their responsibilities explicitly and the commissioning around their services, so that there was adequate resource that followed that expectation that they were going to do that. So I think it's really important to say there are things that individual healthcare professionals can do, but actually that needs to be backed up by structural changes within our system to allow them to more effectively have those conversations.
And from your wider knowledge of these services, what do you know about services that are available for GPs to refer to? Is it patchy around the UK, or how are these services structured for GPs to refer to?
Yes, it is really patchy. I mean, I've been working in this area for several years, and it does, like everything, it fluctuates. So I would say 6 or 7 years ago, we had children's weight management services were quite broadly commissioned across the country. But there was a period of time when a lot of them then got decommissioned, and local authorities were trying to commission different ways of addressing childhood obesity. Then that, you know, more recently that swung back, and people are more interested in looking at specific services for primary care to refer into again. So it does vary. And I think that's one of the challenges that we picked up on in our study, is the fact that actually it's really, really difficult for healthcare professionals to know what services are out there, because they do keep changing.
Absolutely. And I think most clinicians would share that frustration of services being present to refer patients to, but then those services are withdrawn, which creates just headaches and unsatisfactory outcomes, I think, for patients, really. Any other key findings you want to highlight coming out of this research?
The key findings here are that we do need some structural changes if we really want healthcare professionals working in primary care to be able to effectively have these conversations with parents and children. And I think the other thing I'd just like to highlight is around the training. So we mentioned training around being able to give specific advice around nutrition and physical activity, but actually there's a real need for other skills to support this activity. So training around cultural awareness, training around the use of BMI as a measure, the need to look at core training of nurses and doctors, both at an undergraduate and a postgraduate level.
Really interesting. So a big plug for some meaningful structural changes and changes to training. So that's been really useful to hear. But I think this has been a great paper to talk around, a really commonly encountered topic in practice. And I think that's a great place to wrap things up. But I just wanted to say thank you very much for your time here.
Thank you.
And thank you all very much for your time and for listening to this BJGP podcast. The original research article can be found on bjgp.org, and the show notes and podcast audio can be found at bjgplife.com. It's been great to get some practical tips about how to initiate these somewhat difficult conversations in practice, so I hope it's been helpful for you. Thanks again, and bye!